From the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network, it's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, your host all over the Great Lakes State, brought to you in part by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral, Darton Archery, Costa Sunglasses, HHA Sports, and thanks always to our friends at MUCC protecting our rights to hunt and fish here in Michigan. Also, if you want to pick up any of the podcasts, do so. Brought to you by Carnivore Club, the official Meat of the Month Club. I love these guys. carnivoreclub.co. And if you're looking for something different for the holiday season to get somebody, you know, the finest jerkies, meats, cheeses brought to your door, check them out. carnivoreclub.co. There's a link at wildmichiganradio.com. That is our website. And when you check out, use the promo code WILDMICHIGAN for 15% off your order. And they are bringing you the podcast. And this is a show you're definitely going to want to hear because Gary Gashiel of Rhodes, Michigan is going to be on the show today. He caught the new state record smallmouth bass that breaks a record that has stood for over 109 years here in Michigan. We'll talk with Gary. That poor guy's been buried in phone calls. He doesn't know who he is anymore, but fortunately we've got him booked for the show and we'll be talking with him. Also going to be talking to Matt Stutzman, the armless archer here on Wild Michigan. But first, we're going to start the show with Stacy Sawyer as we are now smack dab in the middle of bow season. And Stacy with the American Heart Association joining us here on the show. Stacy, welcome. How are you?
I am good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And we've had the opportunity to talk in the past, but this is the first time here on Wild Michigan. And heart health is so important because every year, and this is not a statistic we like to report, but every year we lose a hunter in the field due to heart attack, it seems. It's almost inevitable that it's going to happen to somebody while they're dragging out their deer or just making their way to a stand.
Right. You do hear of that. And so we want the hunters to be aware and conscious of their heart health and be heart smart.
And heart smart, you know, we've kind of chuckled off air about, you know, about myself and, you know, look, this roller coaster I put myself through with gaining weight, losing weight and the like. And sometimes it's difficult to really monitor ourselves physically. And when that time comes in October or November or whenever we're getting out, we're putting stresses on ourselves that normally we would probably not do during the regular work week even.
Right, right. We actually, several years ago, we had a study come out that compared the workload of an individual hunting to that of the same individual exercising on a treadmill and discovered that the hunting places the heart under more strain. So lots of times we don't think about that as we're going out into the woods and hunting because we're going out there for a good time and, you know, to bring back some venison. And, you know, we don't think of it as exercise, but, you know, when you're hauling in a big buck, that puts a lot of strain on your heart, obviously.
Well, it can. I mean, if we take into consideration the fact that we're putting our gear on, clothes that we probably normally wouldn't wear during the regular course of the year, we're walking out, whatever the distance is, to our stand, possibility of climbing anywhere from 14 to 30 feet in the air, and being elevated in that amount of time, and then to have the excitement of a deer come in, you know, that raises the heart level, and any hunter that's ever walked the face of the earth knows that excitement, and it's something internal that, I mean, not only drives us, but could really put our bodies in check.
Right, exactly. So that's why we recommend that, you know, you start exercising. Well, we obviously recommend you exercise every day, but especially if you're a hunter, to start exercising before the first day of the hunt. You know, when hunting opens, don't let that be the first day that you're out there exercising and walking a couple miles into the woods. You know, if it's been since last year that you've walked that distance, make sure that you take some time to get your body in shape a little bit and get your heart used to the activity again.
You know, it's funny you should say that to plan to start working.
Plan
your exercise. That's like planning your, you know, sighting in your scope. It's like, wow, November 15th is this big shock that comes around, and all of a sudden, wait a minute, opening day's tomorrow. I got to buy bullets. I've got to buy a license. I've got to sight in my scope. Okay, it's not a shock. That date is on the calendar every time in the same spot year after year. So, you know, again, it's not the things we think about until a lot of times after the fact, but being proactive really helps.
Exactly. You know, today is the day that you need to schedule a checkup with your physician and increase your physical activity before you head out there. And, you know, we can't stress enough how important that is. And also, you know, be aware of what you're putting in to your body before you head out there. You know, don't fill up on that grease-filled, bacon-filled fried egg breakfast. You know, avoid it. Avoid the high-calorie, the high-fat foods, because that just makes your body work even harder. You know, go out with a light breakfast. Because that's really important, too, not only being physically active and eating right, but you also need to, obviously, eat right.
Speaking with Stacy Sawyer here from the American Heart Association. Stacy, thank goodness for our Carnivore Club podcast. I'll tell you why, because radio's just clicked off everywhere. Somebody's saying that we can't eat a big breakfast before we go hunting. Excuse me, I'm kidding. But no, our health is a serious issue. And again, we lose people to falls because they're not strapped in with their safety harnesses or small accidents every year. But heart health is something that we can definitely pay attention to. And I'm just going to real quickly throw this at you because World Stroke Awareness Day is coming up next week. That's something still, I mean, you know, knowing where you are, having somebody know where you are hunting is imperative, because if you don't come back at a certain time or they don't know where you're at, it's difficult to help. And in that case, with a stroke, can be the same thing.
Exactly. It can be the same thing with a stroke. And, you know, you need to be hunting with a friend. You know, try not to hunt alone. Tell your family and friends where you're going and actually state a time that you're going to be back. Take a cell phone, and, you know, hopefully it works out in the woods, you know, but in case you do need to call 911. And you know, when you do get that buck that we're all dreaming to get, you know, get your friends and your family to go out there and haul it in with you and not drag it by yourself, because, you know, that puts a lot of strain under your heart. And also, know the signs of a heart attack and a stroke. That's so important, because lots of times those signs can be ignored, and so you need to know what the signs are. So if you're feeling, you know, the uncomfortable pressure in your chest, squeezing, that is a sign of a heart attack or a pain, even in the center of your chest that lasts more than a few minutes or goes away and then it comes back. You know, it might not be indigestion from that breakfast that you ate. You know, pay attention to how long it last, and then contact help if you need it. Don't dismiss it. And especially if you have pain that spreads, you know, it starts in your chest, it spreads to your shoulders, or maybe it's in your neck or your arms. You know, those are all signs of a heart attack. And, you know, if you have lightheadedness or you're sweating or you're nauseous, you know, just be aware of those. Those aren't normal reactions for your body, and if it's happening, don't be ashamed to call for help.
Absolutely.
Call 911, call your friend, call somebody and get help.
Stacy Sawyer, American Heart Association. Real quickly, what is the website where we can find out more information about heart health?
Heart.org.
Very simple. Heart.org. Stacy Sawyer with the American Heart Association, also the American Stroke Association. Definitely things to watch out for, and we appreciate you sharing that information with us here on the show.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely. Safe hunting, exactly, to everybody. And guess what? November 15th is coming up real fast, so sight in your shotguns and your rifles, okay? Little tip from us here at Wild Michigan. Check us out, wildmichiganradio.com on the Michigan Talk Network.
you can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I am Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network. Our website, wildmichiganradio.com, brought to you by Darton Archery. 65 years in Michigan producing great archery products. We are using the new Darton Toxin crossbow. They changed the name of the Rebel to the Toxin 135SS. Love the crossbow, but I still prefer my vertical bow, man. My DS700 is just awesome. Love the Darton Archery line. Check them out. Link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Going to speak with Catherine Schroeder from the Michigan DNR. Catherine is the one that certified Greg Gashiel's state record smallmouth bass. Now, a state record that had stood since 1906, 109 years this record stands, and this poor guy gets plucked out of obscurity because he happened to land this fish. And now has become the most popular bass angler in the state of Michigan, you know, with the exception of Kevin Van Dam, of course, and Chad Pipkins, are my neighbor. But this is a pretty big deal, and there's a process that you have to go through. And Catherine joins us. Catherine, we appreciate you joining us. When I spoke with you earlier in the week about measuring the fish, I mean, we know it's a part of your job, but was there just maybe a little excitement knowing that you'd be the one weighing this in?
Oh, yeah, because it's been such a long-standing record. We don't get an opportunity to do state fish even all the time, and then when this you know, big was really important. So we made sure that we got everything right. You know, typically our Master Angler program, which is just, you know, recognizing large fish, mm-hmm. Is done by length. The state records are somewhat different. They're done by certified weight. Scale has to be certified in order for it to count.
Now, when you say certified scale, there is a process to that even to make this all legitimate. What is the certification process for a scale? I mean, can this be something at the local, you know, meat counter? Because you know, because of weights and measures, they have to be accurate.
Right, that is correct. There's several certification companies that will do this. They'll come out to the scale, and they'll actually calibrate the scale using known weights and measures, and then they put a certification on that. That's to protect the consumer, and typically they're found in meat markets, agriculture scales, things like that. And right on the scale, it will have the certification, who did it, and a number and everything on it, and a date. And we require that is put on the form that's submitted for the Master Angler program and for the state records. The Master Angler program used to need that, but now it was changed to lengths because many of the meat markets and such either aren't certified always or they weren't allowing people to weigh their fish.
Speaking with Catherine Schroeder from the Michigan DNR, Catherine certified the smallmouth bass taken by Greg Gashiel of Rhodes, Michigan, 9.33 pounds, although lengthwise, like you said, it was not as long, I don't believe, as the original state record back in 1906. It did exceed it in weight, and I think that was 9.25 pounds originally.
That's correct. The 1906 record was 27 and a half, I believe. I had that in front of me a minute ago.
It's 27 and a quarter. You're close.
A quarter, right. And his fish was 24 and a half. The thing about length measurements, and especially a record as long back as 1906, there's little documentation how they even did that one in our files. But you know, we required on a flat board normally with its mouth closed and its head all the way against the end of the board, and then you squeeze the ends of the tail together to get the length. And that is when people do lengths, it varies, but that's what we're supposed to have them do.
Man, now he was fishing in Hubbard Lake in Alcona County. The first one was taken in Sheboygan County from Long Lake. That is a, Catherine, when you eyeballed that fish for the first time, you just had to be going, wow, that is just a freak.
Right. It looks much different than any fish I've ever seen. It's just so thick and big. Very, very, probably a very large, old fish. Yeah, very impressive and strong, very stout.
Oh, yes. I love smallmouth bass fishing. Of course, Lake St. Clair, very well known for its smallmouth bass fishery. BASS has come through. They did a tournament there this week, or this year, rather. Last year, they were up in the Bays de Noc area in September, which got a little cold for those guys. A lot of the southern anglers not really used to it. But, you know, still, Michigan is becoming a smallmouth destination. And now with this new state record, it's really got to put us on the map.
Yeah, it'll probably increase the tourism for sure. People will target them in these areas. And I'd expect people to catch large fish from these larger lakes. They're less heavily exploited by anglers in general. The fish get old. They may have slower growth, but they're not caught as readily, so maybe they get older. Your chances of getting a bigger fish are probably better on those type of situations.
Now, as you know, look, this is your daily job. You work for the DNR. You see all different kinds of things. But having some sort of attachment to this, no matter how long it stands, I mean, it might not stand for 106 years or 109 years. It might. But having some sort of attachment to it, do you feel a little sense of pride through this whole thing?
Oh, yeah. I feel honored to have seen it, to have witnessed it. And it was yes, I'm very happy for Greg. I think it's a tremendous accomplishment. I mean, you just don't see that kind of fish every day.
No, absolutely. I've never seen anything remotely. I mean, 6 pounds is my biggest, and to me, that was a pig. That was a big fish to take out of the river.
Right. I liked his comment. I think it was too big to break the water because it was so heavy.
Oh my gosh! I mean, was there a large crowd around this, or was this just a small event that just kind of happened and then exploded?
You'd have to ask Greg that. I didn't come into the scene until later because he caught it during the tournament and then later had it weighed. And so, you know, the part where he caught it and everything, that drew the attention. And then afterwards, it was very low-key.
Oh, yeah. I talked to Greg earlier, and it's just, you know, you pluck somebody out of everyday life, and all of a sudden you throw them in a statewide spotlight, and it'll go beyond that because, again, this is a big fish at over 9 pounds, but Catherine Schroeder, this is quite an honor to talk to you because you're like my one degree of separation from the fish, you know, and Greg is my other one degree of separation, but, you know, finding out how scales are certified, things like that, I mean, it's important stuff, and to know that length for master angler is very cool as well.
Well, we just try for recognizing just a large fish, not necessarily a state record.
Sure.
It's so much easier for the angler, for the honor system, and they take a picture, they could send that in and submit those, and it's much easier. For a state record, we have to do a little more just to make sure it's all legitimate, obviously.
Appreciate it.
In 1906, I mean, that was the oldest record that we had from what I could see on our state record fish listing.
All right. Catherine Schroeder on Wild Michigan.
Hey, this is Nick Munch of Michael Waddell's Bone Collector, and you're listening to my main man, Duran Martinez, on Wild Michigan.
Rifle in a gun rack, hanging in the back blast, a knife on my belt, ain't no lamp for sale.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I am Duran Martinez, your host. A fun show, man. Fun show this week. Talking about state record smallmouth, talking about getting outdoors with my buddy Brian Brosdahl. Going to talk a little bit of archery right now. We love archery. We love our sponsor. We love Dart and Archery for joining us here, Michigan Archery Company. 65 years in the making, still producing crossbows and compound bows, doing a great job. And this is funny because in July of 2012, I sent out an email to a gentleman because I'd heard about this young fellow by the name of Matt Stutzman, also known as the Armless Archer. I reached out and said, you know what, let me see if I can get with Matt. Give me about a week. 3 years go by. I'm checking my emails. I'm like, hey, it's been a week. Let's see if I can get Matt Stutzman on the show. And by goodness, patience, perseverance pay off. We have Matt Stutzman here on the show right now, the Armless Archer. How are you, Matt?
I am doing wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for coming on the show with us. It's been fun. I look back sometimes because sometimes these things take time. You, sir, have a busy schedule, and it revolves around archery, but I want to kind of start from the beginning. You were born without arms. Let's state the obvious right here now on the show.
Yeah. So I was born back in the 1982. I was born without arms, and the technology back then to find out why I was born without arms, all they could come up with was there was no medical reason for why I was born without any arms.
So I mean, it was just that simple. There was nothing to it, and this is what happened. So instantly from birth, without ever knowing, there was no adaptation. You just did what you do.
Yeah, actually, the doctor told my parents that it was going to cost like millions of dollars for them to adapt the world as we know it to me. So like have a special toothbrush made or prosthetic arms or that kind of sort. So because of that, they didn't have millions of dollars, they actually put me up for adoption when I was 3 months old. And the new family that adopted me at 13 months old, the doctors told them the same thing. So because they didn't have millions of dollars, they did reach out to an insurance company who got me some prosthetic arms.
Mm-hmm.
They have, like, the hooks on the ends. And to be honest with you, I only remember wearing them twice, and the second time I wore them, I went to go give this girl a hug and misjudged the distance between myself and her and accidentally punched her in the face with them. And so I was like, these things are not for me. So at a very young age, I just knew my life was going to be a life of no arms, no prosthetics, or modifications.
Speaking with Matt Stutzman here on Wild Michigan. Matt, you know, I would probably find that story a bit more strange had I not had a friend who was also born without arms and hated his prosthetics. His mom said, you have these, you need to wear them. No. Never wore them. And just went on without.
You know, that's amazing, because that's exactly how it was in my household too, or my family, especially being young. I really had to convince my parents that it was best for me not to have them. You know, for one, people are going to stare at you whether you have arms or not.
Sure.
If you have prosthetic arms on and you're accidentally punching people, it brings a lot more attention to you than I necessarily want, which gives me the realization that they're just more of a hindrance. And I'm sure he felt the same way.
Yeah, he did. I remember him telling me that, you know, it was just not going to happen. You know, it was a fight. And, you know, we'd go over to his house and we'd have dinner together. And I think what killed me the most, not having experienced something like that before, is when I heard him walk to the refrigerator, heard him get a can of Coke out, and he rolled it over to his spot, opened it, and proceeded to drink. Now, something I'm sure to you it's an everyday occurrence, but to, you know, I don't know, I don't like really to use the term, but a little bit more able-bodied is I don't even know if that's a fair comment, but you know, being able to do it, it was kind of a surprise, and he was kind of, you know, concerned for my well-being that I wouldn't be you know, upset by seeing it. I'm like, brother, you got to drink, you got to eat. Why would I be like that? You know, and I see the same things coming from you.
Yeah, yeah. You know, as far as rolling the pop across the floor, just a question. When you open it, did it go spraying everywhere, or was it tapped on the top?
It was pretty good. I mean, I kept waiting for it to explode. But, you know, again, the shock and awe of the whole thing, going, wow, that is so cool. And, mm-hmm. and you know, you... again, not knowing the difference.
Right.
So it wasn't really something to overcome. I think you probably using the prosthetics was overcoming anything.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like learning how to operate prosthetics was more of, a challenge or something like that than just learning how to use your feet, because probably like him as well, since I didn't know any better, my feet just automatically became my hands. And so if I wanted to do something, let's say, like, use my spoon to eat cereal, I would hold it in my toes. In my mind, I just thought that was my hands. And I think because of that, my body just self-taught itself without really the hassle of having to learn how to, like, for example, use prosthetics. I just kind of learned and became, you know, my hands.
Matt Stutzman is our guest. He is known as the Artless Archer. I'm having a hard time today, Matt. I apologize.
Is that right?
But sports, as you're a kid, you're running, you're playing, sports just kind of came anyway, didn't they?
Yeah, you know, as a young kid, I always wanted to be, you know, like what every other kid wanted to be. You know, I always wanted to be, the popular guy who was the best at everything, and sports was my passion. I love art, basketball. I love soccer. I actually got called in hands one time in a soccer game.
What? Come on!
Yeah, I explained that one. That's why I'm laughing. My buddy I played left forward, and he crossed the ball over to me, and it hit me in the chest, more on the left side of my shoulder, and the ref blew hands on me because he. It was funny.
How do you explain that? I mean, seriously.
Yeah, everybody was like laughing. My dad was a coach, so he was like right around the field and yelled the grass, and it was a very interesting situation because how do you call hands on a on armless guy? But you know, I always loved sports, and that's what I wanted to do, and I was willing to try any sport to find my niche or to find out, you know, what I was good at.
And now you are an archer and a darn good one at that. And when we come back, I want to talk about how that started and how you were shooting. We've seen the video, but again, you know, that's something in itself is an amazing thing to witness. And we appreciate you joining us here. Matt Stutzman is joining us here on Wild Michigan, known also as the Armless Archer. You can find him on Facebook, and we'll have a link on our Facebook page. Go to Wild Michigan. Facebook.com/WildMichigan, or visit our website, WildMichiganRadio.com, is where you can find Matt, and he'll be joining us here. We're going to talk about how Matt got into archery here in just a couple of minutes. And Matt, again, I appreciate you joining us here on the show, man. This is a lot of fun to have you here.
Hey, like I said, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure and fun to talk to people who are interested and passionate about the same things I am.
Now, real quickly, before we get to this next segment, before we break for that, aside from field shooting in the Olympics, are you also a hunter?
Absolutely.
Oh.
I love hunting. That's why I don't want to spoil it for everyone, but that's the main reason why I got into archery.
All right. We're going to find out more about that with Matt Stutzman here. I started to break a little early, but I apologize, but the excitement is still growing. We got Matt here. It's taken us a little bit of try to get him, but we got him here. On the show, you're joining us on Wild Michigan. If you miss any of this, make sure to pick up the podcast brought to you by CarnivoreClub.co. Use the promo code Wild Michigan for 15% off. We'll be right back with Matt Stutzman on the Michigan Talk Network.
Hi, this is Larry Weissen, and you're listening to Wild Michigan with Duran Martinez.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, brought to you in part by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral. Our website, wildmichiganradio.com. If you miss any of this, pick it up on the podcast, brought to you by Carnivore Club. 15% off for using the promo code WILDMICHIGAN. Matt Stutzman is our guest here. He is also known as the Armless Archer. And Matt, I watched your video. The equipment you use is pretty much standard compound bow stuff, but you've got a hook that goes around your shoulder area apparatus. Tell us how that all got started with you in archery.
So, yeah, it was 2009, and I was a stay-at-home dad trying to help figure out things with my wife. She was the one that was working full time, and I convinced her, because I've always been a hunter, just never with a bow, and I convinced her in 2009, I convinced her to allow me to purchase a bow. We didn't really have a lot of money, so I actually ended up talking to the landlord and convincing her to let us catch up on rent a couple months later, and then I used that money to buy myself a bow. And how I would shoot initially, my very first time, was I would actually grab the string with my teeth, because I Googled how to teach an arm of man how to shoot a bow.
Sure.
You can't find that on Google.
No, no.
So I was kind of like, clueless here. I had no idea what to do. So I was grabbing the string with my mouth. And after a couple shots like that, I knew that I love my teeth way more than archery. So I had to come up with a way to shoot this bow. Well, when I was younger, I saw my dad had a wrist strap that would go like around his wrist that had a hook on it that he would pull like on a trigger. So I remember calling him up and said, "Dad, do you have one of these things? What are they called?" And initially, I would stick them on my right shoulder. I would just Velcro it onto my right shoulder, and then I would pretend my right shoulder was someone's hand, for example, and draw the bow back, and then I would trigger it with my jaw. I shot that way for probably 3 months or so. One day, I relaxed my shoulder too much and slipped off at full draw, and that was really scary.
So, yeah, no kidding.
The strap that you see now actually became out of that. A buddy of mine said, "Why don't you just put on a strap that goes around your shoulders and under your armpits?" So I did, and that's all it took to love archery and not, knowing I could shoot a bow without hurting myself. And that's probably in the video you see, that's what that is.
That's, necessity is always the mother of invention, but drive has to be brought in from somewhere, and the passion to hunt and to really take the initiative to want to do it with a compound bow, not even so much a crossbow. Okay, which I know would be difficult to try and cock, but they have mechanical ways to do it now. Uh-huh. But to do it with a vertical bow is just incredible, and that has taken you to levels that you probably never dreamed of.
No, in fact, when I first went up to get my first bow, I went into the archery store and said, "I'm here, my name's Matt, I want to shoot a bow." And he looked at me all funny-like and said, you mean crossbow?" I said, "Well, what's a crossbow?" And I said, "Well, it's just like little," and he described it. And I said, no, I want to shoot one of those." And I pointed a compound bow on the wall, and he goes, "How are you going to shoot it?" I said, "I don't know, just let me have it. And I'll go in your back range, and everyone leave me alone, and don't stare at me because I don't know what's going to happen." And tried to figure it out. In fact, I think the arrow is still stuck in his ceiling today.
I was going to say, was the term deposit ever brought up prior to shooting?
He just has me sign the arrow now. That way he can say, "This is Matt's arrow."
Wow. But, let me put myself in that guy's position for a minute, Matt, and say, okay, where are the hidden cameras? Because this gentleman without arms wants to shoot a vertical bow.
Right.
Wow.
who in their right mind, there's a lot of people who have two arms that won't shoot a vertical bow,
Look, I know guys that are quite capable, right. And they can anyway.
Right. And what make so obviously if Punk was back then, he'd probably have been like, "All right, where's Ashton and what's going on? Where's the cameras?"
So now you're hunting. You're hunting.
I love hunting a lot, and I've lost deer because of blinds, and so I actually prefer not to use them.
Nice.
I actually can climb a ladder stand, and I will hunt out of a tree stand. Most of my tree stands are about 20 feet in there, and I'll hunt just like everyone else. I have long enough shoulders, what I call stubs, probably about 6 inches on each side, and it's good enough to grab onto the ladder, and I can reach each rung, and I just climb right up.
I'm absolutely speechless right now, right?
When I do presentations, especially for hunting presentations, people say, you know, Matt, how do you get in the tree stand? And I say, well, you know, we film everything I do because eventually we like to make a TV show where watching Matt in his element. And so I said, the camera guy goes up first, throws down the rope, and he has about 5 seconds to get me up there before the rope around my neck starts cutting the wind supply off. And of course, that's not obviously how I do it, but I have to have a sense of humor about it.
Well, I'll be making a phone call to Steve Gruber over at Wolf Creek Productions the minute I'm done here with this interview, because he's not going to believe it any more than I do, and he's been doing outdoors television for 20-some years now.
It's interesting that there was a tree stand company that got a hold of me about 2 years ago, and it was for a climbing stand. And so I actually made a video. I take this climber, and I actually use it all by myself, and I climb to the top of a telephone pole with it. And then I had to prove to him that I could use a climber. So I did that, and then I hung out there for a little bit, and then I climbed back down. Obviously, things didn't go any further, so that video was never released or anything like that. But, yeah.
Now, look, you've already shocked everybody listening with the fact that you get up in a tree stand higher than I am comfortable being. You hunt with a vertical bow. Again, you know, you're not the armless archer by accident. I mean, you're born without arms. But what led to the Paralympics? Because that itself is an amazing feat.
So I started in 2009 with a bow. January of 2010, so it had been about 5 months later, I went to a tournament because my buddy said, you need to go shoot a tournament. You're actually pretty good. So I go to this tournament, and no idea what I'm getting myself into. Do horribly. I had, like, whisker biscuit and hunting arrows. I mean, it was, you know, I had no idea what I was doing. And 2 days later, a guy called me from a bow manufacturer and said, hey, we want to sponsor you. And, well, let's be honest, who doesn't like free stuff? So I'm like, yeah, where do I sign? I take this awesome bow home, and I'm showing my buddy, and he tells me, he goes, Matt, the reason why they sponsor you is because you have no arms, and every time you shoot their bow, you draw attention to their product. And it's not because you're good. And I'm like, what? I said, so I went home. I was kind of upset. You know, everybody has those friends that are honest, right? So I go home, and I talk to my wife. I said, you know, I don't want to be the sideshow. I don't want to be that guy who shoots a bow with his feet. I want to be known as the best archer in the world. And then, oh, by the way, do you know he does it with no arms? So it was the 12th of it was the 15th of January, 2010. At that point in time, I still had no idea about the Paralympics or anything like that. I just knew at that moment I wanted to be the best archer in the world. So I sat in a chair 8 hours a day and began teaching myself how to shoot.
Wow. And you've gone on, you've medaled in competition. You is silver, correct?
Correct. They actually call me the King of Silver because... I started in 2010. By 2012, I was the top U.S. man on the men's team. Ended up winning silver in the 2012 Paralympic Games. The guy who beat me was from Finland. I remember shaking his hand with my foot and saying, congrats, you'll never beat me again, which, since he didn't understand English, he said, yes, I know. and then I went on from 2012 to this year. And then, what year? Let's see, August. Is it August? Yeah. In August of 2015, I didn't place any lower than second
in
every international tournament I've been to since. In August, I went to World Championships. We won a team gold. And then I had my worst individual finals finish in, 4 years or so. So I feel pretty lucky. I win a lot of silvers.
Well, you know,
I was ranked as high as number one in the world there for a while. But we'll see what the ranking comes out after World Championships.
Well, Matt, I tell you what, it's been an absolute pleasure having you here on the show, and cannot thank you enough for joining us, man. Absolutely inspiring, and let's not wait 3 years to get you back on.
Hey, I'm all down with that. I do appreciate you having me on. This has been a blast.
Absolutely. I've enjoyed it. My best to you and your family, and hang on the line. I want to talk to you off air, but Matt Stutzman, check him out, The Armless Archer on Facebook, right here on Wild Michigan.